Welcome to Thrivers, Impact-Driven Leadership for the Next Normal. I'm your host, Sarah Fanslow, Chief of Impact of Thrive Impact. If you're listening to this, you're probably somebody who doesn't just want to do nice things in the world, but you actually want to create positive change in people's lives and not burn out while doing it. Well, how do you do that? Our mission is to redefine what's normal for workplace leadership, to be about co-creating impact from the inside out. Burnout is the enemy of creating positive change, and we want to connect you with impact-driven leaders and ideas so that you can learn to thrive in today's landscape. Today, I'm joined by my co-host, Tucker Wanamaker. Oh, hey there, Tucker.
Hey-o.
Co-hosting, so how are you feeling?
I love it.
I'm so excited. And we have a really fun conversation. Well, fun, I don't know. Hopefully, I know it will be fun. It may
it could also be hard.
It's about difficult conversations. So Tucker, before I introduce the guests, like talk to me. How are you feeling about this conversation? It's coming up for you.
I feel like it's such a ripe time for talking about how to have conversations that are humane, yet also difficult. I mean, we had two organizations we're working with right now where earlier today we talked about a massive pain between the board chair and the ED. We also talked about the executive director being gone and now the board is coming in. And it's just like I feel like most of our work revolves around helping people to have difficult conversations because there's so many difficult conversations that are needing to be had because people are realizing things are bubbling to the surface. And it's like, wait, this isn't working anymore. Wait, is this even worth it for me anymore? I mean, there's so many things like that. So I feel like it's a really important next normal impact-driven leadership topic to talk about. So I'm grateful it's happening.
Yeah, 100%. Well, I'm so excited to introduce our guests. And spoiler alert, I have worked with both of these humans and they are my favorites. So it'll probably just be a fun chat. But first, we have Tabitha May Tulub. She is currently the Director of Training and Partnerships with Multiplying Good. She has about 25 years experience in the youth leadership and development space. She had this amazing company called Roots and Wings that trained young people and the adults who care about them in a lot of different pieces like leadership, communication, identity development. Before that, she was with another awesome youth organization called Youth Lead, training and inspiring young people to use their values and beliefs to connect with communities. She has graduate training in marriage and family counseling and holds degrees in psychology and education. And when she's not doing all this amazing work with young people, she lives around the Boston area and has two beautiful children and a husband. And Tabitha, we're just so lucky to have you here today.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here.
Absolutely. And then we have Janae. I love Janae. She is a fave of mine, as is Tabitha. But Janae is currently the senior program manager. She has 15 years experience of youth development experience. She right now is overseeing the New York and New Jersey chapter of Students in Action. That's part of Multiplying Good. Before joining Multiplying Good Youth, Janae was the youth outreach manager for ECAP USA, where she educated, empowered, and mobilized young people around the issue of child trafficking. She's also worked at places like Global Kids, South Asian Youth Action, and Advocacy Lab, teaching young people about social justice. Janae went to the University of Vermont and New York University for grad school. And she's an AmeriCorps alumni. And Janae, well, actually both Tabitha and Janae and I worked together at Multiplying Good. And Janae was like my first human I hired when I was working at Multiplying Good. And I still remember sitting in the interview room with Janae. And I was just like, yes, if this is going to be what it is. And she and I did so many conferences together. And we just, Janae, it's great to see your face. And I'm so glad to have you here.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely.
I feel like in hearing both of your bios and a little bit of your background that you're experts in difficult conversations. <It's> like, everything from helping young people to connect across, you know, with communities and around social justice issues. And I'm like, I hear two people who have been deep in the trenches of how to actually host, facilitate, and have difficult conversations. So I just noticed that in hearing your bios, like, wow, I have so much to learn here today. This will be great.
I would have to say that word expert makes me uncomfortable. I'm not sure anyone's an expert on this. but I think the value of the discomfort of it, I do feel very familiar with. Yeah, for sure.
Seconding that.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, I mean, I think that may be a good place to start. I'd love for you to each just tell us a little bit about, like, what is your kind of experience with difficult conversations? And what kind of brings you to think about this as a really important piece?
You can start, Tabitha.
Yeah, I mean, the podcast is only so long, but I would say there's two primary things that, like, put me in this space. One is where I grew up. I grew up in a very homogeneous town in Maine, and somehow had the clarity to understand that the world didn't look like the town I grew up in. So I spent the first year of college in a very, very diverse university, making lots of mistakes, being very, very ill-equipped. And I think that drove me to understand how important that skill set is. And I valued it and it was amazing, but it was also a really painful year. And so, so that kind of drove me to do this work. And then I think when you work with young, one of the beauties of working with young people is that they are right there, they are in it, and sort of supporting them to have those conversations as a way to give them a path forward. So I think those are the two things that brought my heart to it. And then I've just been in many situations where wanting to think about helping myself and others navigate that.
Yeah. Janae, what about you? What brought you to this spot of difficult conversations?
So interestingly enough, my starting experience is kind of the inverse of Tabitha's. So I grew up in a very diverse area, and then I went to college in a very, very white area. And so being there and experiencing like tokenism, well-intended sometimes and other times not really, just really got me thinking like, this is a problem and there needs to be a conversation or multiple conversations around it. And so really attempting, I don't know how successfully, but to get those conversations started, you know, even as a 17 or 18 year old, is kind of where that seed was planted. And then to tap at this point, just working with young people, I mean, the conversations have to happen. There's so much that they need to say and so much they want to say. And sometimes there's that difficulty of, you know, speaking to an adult about a certain topic or even speaking to your peer, you know, when you disagree. And so they've definitely encouraged me to even, you know, lean into that discomfort and be just be in the trenches with them to have these difficult conversations.
Well, I love that. I love that both of you have this kind of identity piece a little bit around formative conversations that have brought you to this. And the three of us, just for the readers, while we were working at Multiplying Good, we did some work with Edward M. Kennedy Institute in Boston around having difficult conversations, specifically how to help adults. Because I think adults are the biggest problem here, right? Yeah, I don't know. You tell me. But helping adults learn how to have difficult conversations and facilitate them so that the young people that they're working with could really kind of share their thoughts and their voice. And so I'm curious, as you all think about the work you're doing now and have done before, what are those kind of pains or issues you're seeing come up for nonprofit leaders or young people? What are the pains they're experiencing around difficult conversations? And it could be having them, facilitating, whatever's coming up for you. But what are kind of the pains or issues you're seeing here?
Why don't you kick us off this time, Janae?
Sure. I think the main one is just a fear of having these conversations, right? And so there's this idea that one, you know, maybe we'll say the wrong thing, right? And that everyone will look at me and, you know, think that I'm uneducated or I'm this or I'm that. And two, we do live in, you know, a cancel culture, right? And so again, you make one mistake sometimes and that can blow up everything. So I think there's a strong fear amongst our leaders to just, you know, to broach the topic. And then if you work, you know, let's say in a nonpartisan organization, it's hard. Well, I don't want to come off as taking a stance against this or for this. And what you kind of end up doing is pretending that that issue doesn't exist, which is problematic in and of itself. So I would say that that's really the thing that has come to mind, is that there's this deep rooted fear of just having those conversations. And then if someone is willing to have those conversations, it's, well, where do we start, right? How do we create a space in order to do so? And there's going to be, you know, discomfort and people are going to be offended. And so there's really, again, I mean, it still kind of boils down to fear, but it's also an uncertainty. It's like, well, how do we even get this conversation started?
Yeah, I would echo that 1000%. That fear, I think, is the biggest factor, especially in our communities right now, are so polarized and there's so much tension to begin with. We're constantly afraid of saying or doing the wrong thing or hurting people that we care about, yeah. communities that we care about. I think also, like, just to name it, organizations have attorneys and HR professionals that are saying, don't do anything, don't say anything, like we have a document they're going to sign. And then that's, so I think that, although I understand they're trying to be protective, is really, I think, can get in the way. I also think a lot of organizations assume if difficult conversations aren't happening, it means everything's okay.
Yes.
And so they're just like, we don't need to have difficult conversations because everything's fine. And I think we're humans. Humans are complicated. The issues we talk about are complicated. If difficult conversations aren't coming up, it's because people are uncomfortable or worse, afraid to have them, not because they're not there. And that, I think, is a major barrier. I also just think we don't teach people this. There is a skill set to have difficult conversations, and we don't teach that. And it is against our grain. It's against our biology, our anthropology. It's against everything we are as humans. And so there's no way for it to develop unless we intentionally start building these skills in our young people and our employees. So we just don't have the skills, especially at the leadership level. It's just not there. I mean, I think a lot of times on the ground, the direct service people, they have them because they have to. But it's not being transferred up. And even with that on the ground, if it's not up here, eventually, you know, the culture and climate starts to implode. So
Tucker, curious what thoughts or reflections are coming up for you.
Yeah, I want to just like get into some stories, like where, you know, it doesn't have to be too recent. I know we joked about that at the beginning. Over the last week, where have you got? But because you're Tabitha, I'm so curious, especially what you just said around the lack of skills too, of is how much of this is a how issue. And because I don't have the skill, therefore I have the fear, you know, like, is it really, is it, how much of this could be solved with just some simple tools and some tricks? Not everything, I'm assuming, of course, but, and so that's where I was like, sometimes I was even talking to a friend of mine earlier this week of like, sometimes we try to like go for the heart issue, you know, like the deep rooted issue of like what's really going on, when really it may be just like a tactical how challenge of like, let's just create better conditions. Like we usually joke about, you know, whenever people have, they have like these big diversity, equity, and inclusion conversations, and then they have a meeting the next hour of the silent majority and the vocal minority. It's like, we're just totally missing it, right? Like we're like, there's how to this. And I just wonder how, getting into some stories of how, where this, the how has played itself out in your real lives, and some of those skills that you're talking about that help, could help alleviate some of these fears in a sense.
Yeah. I mean, I think you're right on. And I think the how, I mean, this isn't rocket science, right? Like not really, but it is uncomfortable and it's hard. And some of it can be taught formally, but some of it just needs to be informally messed up in safe containers where people can fail and then authentically correct and move forward. You know, I think, you know, I think a lot about my freshman year of college. I say I spent a year offending everyone I met, and it wasn't because I was a bad, I was such a good person, but I had no context for how to have difficult conversations. And so I think a lot about the head and the heart, right? Like you can understand something intellectually about how to have a conversation or how to engage with someone who is different from you in whatever way. And that's good. That's a good first step. But then there's also this heart understanding that comes later. And so I think we have to teach people the formal skills of how to have difficult conversations. And then we have to give them the containers where they can safely fail so that they can really get that heart connection. And so that it becomes just organic way of operating as opposed to like, oh no, difficult conversation, engage, right? Like it has to like get to that next level eventually. But I think that's the hard part. So I didn't tell you any stories. Sorry.
Well, I want to hear about like, when have you created the container, right? I love what you're hitting on of, you know, giving people space to learn, because we already have this inherent joy in learning, and learning involves messing it up. All right. Just like you've seen any child try to learn how to walk. Guess what? They had to fall how many times in order to learn how to walk? And that's how learning is. And we all want that, right? We all want to we have a joy in learning, but we don't have the conditions or the containers in which to learn. And there's a whole body of research back behind all this, but that whole concept of like we've stolen learning away from our institutions. Yeah. But I'm curious from you, like how have you created a container? Like, tell me about a container that was there with your staff, with your team, with whatever it might be.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I'll talk about Roots and Wings just because I had sort of like full control, for lack of a better word. But I think, you know, the containers, we talked work with Edward Kennedy. The containers are fairly simple. I think the challenge is they need to be implemented before there's a crisis, right? Like, they need to be part of every staff meeting. They need to be part of every strategic plan. They need to be part of every one-on-one, so that is just how we operate. So when something is difficult and uncomfortable, we already have the container, right? So those containers include shared goals, shared agreements about how we operate with each other. Those contain a very lean into questions and curiosity. You know, when we bump up against something, instead of leaning into defense or ego, we lean into curiosity and questions. It includes deep listening building, which is everyone thinks they're good at and no one really is that good at. And also reflection and time and intentionality, which so few organizations feel like they have the space to include in all of these containers. But when you engage that set of things in everything you do, that's just how we operate. That's just how it is. And it doesn't make the difficult discussion more comfortable, because it's a difficult discussion. Yeah. But we all know how we're going to operate when it comes up.
So I hear a lot of shared agreements, shared understandings. Like, we have one at Thrive, which is lead with appreciation, as an example. Which is a learning that I've had to unlearn from not leading with the edit first, you know, like, okay, lead with appreciation. And we're learning how to even do that in our own core values themselves around co-creation and things like that. So, but I'm hearing a lot of coming up with shared agreements, even before a meeting itself, or maybe even right, if you're having a difficult conversation right in front of you, creating the container within that difficult conversation itself.
Yeah.
And I love how you use the word agreements. And we've heard that in our podcast before too, like, not expectations, like how I expect you to show up, but what would I love to have, and what would we love to have, and what can we be in agreement around so that we can go into this container?
Janae, I wanted to kind of invite you, and you've done a lot of this work around difficult conversations. Curious, as you think about back to your conversations, I'm thinking about a few you and I have particularly been in, not Janae to Sarah difficult conversations, but Janae and Sarah with other humans in difficult conversations. Just curious what's coming up for you as you think about kind of how to do this well in some specific spots you've been in and what you've done.
Yeah, so definitely what came to mind as Tabitha was sharing is that, yes, in an ideal world, those containers are already there, right? And sometimes they're not, even when you work at an organization that's been around for years and years and years. And so I think the important piece is to be ready to jump in, to have amazing individuals like Sarah, like Tabitha, and like Tucker, I'm sure, who are ready to say, okay, this doesn't exist and we have to create it. And so just thinking about, you know, our time at MG, unfortunately in 2020, you know, a lot of things were happening and we were not prepared to have difficult conversations. Yeah. But, you know, folks had to step up and say, okay, we're going to create this space. And we Tabitha literally created the brave space for people to come and have difficult conversations. So whether we're talking about the murder of George Floyd, or whether we're talking about how the pandemic affected, you know, different people differently, really, you know, just leaning into that discomfort and saying, I'm going to start this because it's important and it's necessary. And so with that said, it's, you know, hopefully it doesn't always fall on one person, but there are going to be those times where even the folks who do this work, and they shouldn't have to be the ones to step up, they do, right? And so that's kind of what comes to mind. It shouldn't always have to be the same folks, but sometimes it is. But yeah, and just being willing and open, and that's, yes.
Well, I'd love for either one of you to walk through, where have you had a brave space that you have tried to create that did go well, and what happened? What were the factors, the specific factors involved, and what helped it to go well? And then one that didn't go well, it didn't go how you wanted, and it was perhaps a great learning experience for you. And what were the factors involved that you learned from that?
Sure. I can start with one that went well.
You're right.
Yeah. It might be a bit of a cop out. Sorry, Tabitha.
You're good.
So thinking about during the pandemic, we, unfortunately, when George Floyd was murdered, there were a lot of students of color who were devastated, and students in general, but especially our students of color were devastated, and there wasn't a space for them to talk about it. And then some of those students of color had advisors who were white and had no idea, they just had no idea what to do. They're like, I'm a white person. I can't relate to this, you know, this youth of color. What do I do, right? And so one, just naming that, I think was extremely important. Mm. And so what we were able to do is create this space where we said that, like, this is going to be really hard and really uncomfortable. But naming that is one of the biggest things I think that was productive and effective. And then, you know, again, leading with those community agreements of saying like, hey, we are all here with good intentions. And yes, we might mess up. But the, you know, at the heart of the hearts, we're here because we want to learn and we want to be able to support our folks, specifically our young people. And so knew that we had, I think it was maybe 4 or 5 sessions, but we had a couple of sessions, right? And I think that was another area of success, is it wasn't just one conversation like, okay, we're good. It was, no, this is going to be an ongoing conversation for the next couple of weeks. And then of course, you know, making it optional, we don't want to force anyone into these spaces because that defeats the purpose. So, you know, having folks opt in, but also asking that, you know, the folks that do opt in, that they're there fully, they're not in and out, that they're staying focused, they're not distracted. So really being committed to the space. Were some of the things that went well.
And I will say, because I was there at this time, that I think one of the things that, you know, we also did that was important was 2 things. One is kind of create a brave space template. So kind of teachers and adults could go and take that and do that, right? Because I think to Tabitha and Janae's point, there's so much fear. And if you can give folks even just a roadmap, right? I think there's something to hold on to. And you're like, I can take this at least and go out. And the other thing that I think we did, although we could have been more proactive with it, was also have the conversations internally. Because I think oftentimes, especially in organizations that are doing frontline work, there can be a real disconnect between what the organization does outside and what it looks like inside. And that can really, I think, create dissonance for staff working in an organization where it feels like they have to be this one person outside and this other person inside, right? Like, we don't operate that way as humans. We can't. We're one human, right? And so we did have conversations inside the organization about it. And I think, Tabitha, to your earlier point, had we been an organization having those conversations before the murder of George Floyd, we would have been in a much better spot. Because I think what comes up for folks, regardless of whether we wanted to or not, is why is this important to you now, right? Why is it important now? Because everyone else is watching, right? And that's true for so many organizations, right? So many organizations were reactive in that moment because they didn't have anything before that. And so, you know, I think that was both kind of a win and a learning for the organization around kind of who it has to be outside of moments of crisis.
That's good.
I think, you know, one of the things you touched on, Janae, that I think is so important is just the skill of just naming something. I think when I'm in a difficult conversation where I'm like, I'm not sure what to do next, I just name whatever it is. Like, I see this happening. I'm feeling this. Like, there's a power to just naming what you're seeing and feeling. Mm-hmm. I think we also think difficult discussions have to be about solutions, and they do often get to really great solutions because you're actually hearing all the pieces, but that's not where they start. They have to start with safety, and they have to start with the humans in the room, and you have to be able to empathize without feeling like you are agreeing, because it's really not about that. So I think just that piece of naming it is so important to the piece and the goal of the difficult conversation. Why are we having
That reminds me of another difficult conversation we had at Multiplying Good, where it was about a program decision that was made, and this piece around kind of coming together to have the conversation about kind of what folks were thinking and feeling about it without changing the decision, right? I think oftentimes there's this need, and that was actually my response, right? I'm like, let me fix it, right? I want to jump to fixing. And instead of jumping to fixing, which is our natural impulse, I think so much of the time, it's like, let's stop and hear. And what I heard in that conversation, and a lot of staff were there, was that, you know, if we had jumped to fixed, we would have maybe been solving one person's problem and creating a problem for others, right? And so it's such an interesting piece. And when you bring the voices all together, then you can hear, oh, so there's this kind of stream of thought over here. There's this other one over here. There's this one over here. And then to your point, maybe the point isn't to change the solution always, but to just recognize that there were thoughts and feelings about a thing. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, y'all, I want to invite you into our next question, which is just like, we have this frame. We want to think about the next normal of nonprofit leadership. Like, if we're thinking what we want this sector to look like, or even impact-driven leadership, kind of what is the next normal for you all when it comes to difficult conversations? What do you hope to see in the future?
Yeah, I feel like I'm reinventing, like I'm saying similar things, but I think the essence here is the same. I think if we want a new normal, we need leadership that looks at this differently. I think we need leadership that looks at this difficult conversations not as an obstacle to be overcome, but as an opportunity to really see things bigger, see things differently, or just care for their team in a different way. I think we need CEOs and EDs and boards that buy into this as a valuable tool, and then to be able to support staff, we said, with formal training and informal training and structure that just consistently creates spaces and opportunities for us to have these conversations.
Absolutely. I totally agree. And what I would add to that is also just, and I also feel that I'm saying similar things, but just the willingness to create that space for your staff as well, right? Like even, I mean, it should definitely be happening with our leaders, but there should be kind of this sense of community and the sense of openness and belonging where staff can come together, have those conversations and be heard, right? And so I think there's something important about leaders not just making decisions as they have these conversations, but opening up so that staff or, you know, whoever else is involved, you know, stakeholders can come to those leaders as well to give their input on what needs to be done and how things can be changed.
Tucker, curious if things are coming up for you as you're kind of hearing some of these pieces around. It sounds like both kind of giving the training and tools for folks and then just creating the conditions throughout organization. And I would add structures, right? The conditions and structures for folks to engage in this on a regular basis. But as you think about our work, like what's resonating with you here?
I mean, I think the first time that Aaron facilitated us having a joint group discussion about our sorrows over the last year, you know, it was both the wins and the accomplishments, and it was the sorrows and disappointments. And I know that because of that, we started implementing that in our regular work of inviting spaces in a group, in a whole group. And we try to create containers around not disparaging people as an example. And we're learning into how do we create some of those agreements that somebody's not like, I hate that woman, you know, and it's like, oh, that's defeating the purpose, you know? And so that's why I keep thinking about these containers. But that's one of the ones that comes up is Tabby, what you just said around, this is not an obstacle to overcome per se. Like I don't have to figure out a solution per se. Let's just hear first. Let's just listen first. And then see, you know, and then we can go from there, not just assuming we need to go somewhere, because we may not. We may just need to create space for people to feel heard. Which is what I keep thinking of is how do we help to know, like you said this earlier, Tabitha, as well, around we are, most of us think that we're great listeners, but I've been wrestling around with this actually with my 11-year-old daughter, Ella. And I'm like, okay, the classic listening is not because you heard what I said and can tell me the word. Listening is that I feel listened to, is what I've been saying. And I'm like, wait, do I even think that that's true? You know how it is with parenting. And you're like, well, I think I just shared something and I need to figure out if I actually believe it. But I've been wrestling through this concept of what is listening in the first place? If I'm a good listener, does that mean because I'm able to reflect back? Or is it because somebody feels listened to? Is it really about the other, not about me? You know, I'm thinking about David Brooks' newest book right now around how to see others deeply and be deeply seen, how to know a person, and some of the things that he's getting in there And so much of it is about understanding how I'm showing up in this space, but also, does somebody feel deeply seen in the first place? And so that, I think that's what's coming up for me is trying to figure out when is the space. And I don't know this. Like, I think about this with my own wife, like, when do we know it's the space to move forward?
Yeah.
And when do we know it's the space to just hear and to listen? Like, there's a question that somebody told me once of, you can ask your partner, do you want to be, what was it? Heard, helped, or hugged, or something like that. You know? And then, because I don't know right now, to your point, you know, that y'all have started, like, I don't know, like Janae, as you were saying, just naming it. There are so many times where I just don't know what to do. I'm confused, and that doing, maybe somebody does need solution. And maybe they just need to be hugged, or maybe they just need to be heard. And me knowing what's supportive, so that is what keeps coming up for me around this power of listening.
And but I think you just gave your own answer, which is you just ask, right? You ask, what do you need right now?
Well, and in these contexts, you know, Janae and Tabitha, as you've been like in some of the harder, difficult conversations where somebody does voice, whether it's written voice up on a board somewhere or verbal voice into the room that makes it more difficult. What do you do in that moment? What do you do to diffuse, to honor what's being said? Like, because that to me is what people are most afraid of, I think.
Yeah, or that's at least attacked. One of the things.
Yeah, it's right. Like, I'm going to be attacked. I'm vulnerable.
Yeah.
And if I'm in a moment where I feel like somebody is attacking me, like, what do we do as either as facilitators or the one who is being given that difficult conversation, if you will? Curious your thoughts on, like, ways to approach that.
Do you want to kick that one off?
Sure. So I think that's where those community agreements come in, right? Like, that's the first thing that came to mind. Because if you have those set up, you can always refer back to them. So if something is going on where there's like a, you know, there's an ouch moment, if you will, we can say, okay, you know, let's take a pause. Let's review those community agreements so that we know we are all here in good intent and that we're going to lean into this discomfort right now, right? Like, we're not going to attack anyone. We're not going to, you know, point fingers or anything. We're just going to remember and be reminded that we're here for a joint cause and that we're all here in good intentions, right? And so I think that's one of the first things that's helpful. The other thing that I did not mention earlier is that it could be helpful at the start of these conversations to do a grounding exercise, again, to really just bring everyone into this space so that we're all taking deep breaths, right? We started this conversation off with a collective breath. So even small things like that, or in those moments, if let's say if we did not start with a grounding exercise, maybe we take a pause to do a grounding, to reground us, do that exercise. And I think that's one of the things that sometimes facilitators can get nervous about. It's like, nope, we have a schedule. We have to follow this. But it's like, no, something went off the tracks. Let's take a moment to pause and let's recollect ourselves.
Yeah. I think it's also super important to understand just how we function as humans and how our brains work, right? So, you know, to have those skills when the tension in the conversation gets high, to release that tension, because it is literally a different part of our brain, right? When we are... That is fight or flight. That is our caveman brain. Yeah. We cannot have a connected conversation when that part of our brain is on fire, right? Yeah. It's just not possible. And to try to do that is only going to lead to more pain and more hurt. So to be able to relieve that tension in some way, to take a breath, to remind people of ground rules. I think it's also so important, and this is high level human evolution here, but it's so important in these conversations to understand that feelings that come up that are strong are likely not about you, right? Like, I think that was one of the biggest lessons I learned in that year when I would encounter someone and I would feel like myself getting defensive. I'm not approaching this the right way, but also these feelings are like because of a history of experience. And I need to honor that. Like, I need to put my ego aside for a second and be like, this person's reaction to what I just said is one about my inappropriate whatever I just said, and I gotta autocorrect. But also, there's experiences there and feelings there that I don't understand. And part of this interaction is me trying to understand as best as they're willing to share so that we can have a human to human interaction. So I think, you know, going back to, I know it's hard to, everyone wants to know what to do in the crisis, but like, it is so important to put this stuff in place long before your team is in crisis, because then no matter how heated that is, you have a relationship with this person. You are coworkers. They saved your butt on that project last week. They did that amazing thing with that young person that brings you to tears every time you think of it. So no matter what just happened in that interaction, they are a human that you care about. And so that makes everything going forward easier. Mm. So I just think laying that groundwork is so key.
Yeah. Well, and even, I mean, there's some great research on, you know, the importance of high quality connections in the workplace and what it, they really point to. It's the broaden and build theory, right? That, I mean, it's both kind of long-term relationships, but that we can establish meaningful connections in a very short amount of time with other humans. And that that is kind of that grease on the wheel, right? That we need to get through these pieces. I was going to put a, I'm going to play a little bit of devil's advocate though on what you both just shared, because we were in a workshop last week and we, you know, we were doing a strategic plan with an organization that's going through a lot of crisis. And we were asking folks a question, I forget exactly what it was, but folks were putting things up on this tool, we call it Easy Retro Board, which is a digital tool. It's an anonymous board so people can write whatever. And people were writing folks up, things up, and there were a number of pointed comments, right? They weren't, it wasn't kind of to a specific individual, but to departments. And, you know, there are not a ton of people in the room, right? And there's a there was a conversation about, or there's this thing that comes up between people being free to be authentic and people being able to, and people not offending others. So I want to put that to you, like, what is that line? If I'm sitting here being like, and I know what Adam Grant says, but like, what do you guys say? When I'm sitting here saying, this is my authentic self, right? I'm telling you what's authentic to me. How do I deal with that versus I'm offending other people? What does that look like?
You know, I mean, I don't know. I want to say a flip answer, but I'm going to try to be more productive here. I think, you know, I think that I believe so much in the intentionality of the words we use. Like, we can say the same thing and readjust the words and it has a more powerful impact in whatever way we want it to be powerful. Hmm. So I think part of those pointed comments is, what's your goal here? Is your goal to be authentically heard? And if so, you need to say that in a way that people can hear. Because when you put your words out there in a way that's designed as an attack, right. Or could feel like attack if your intentions were not to attack, but your choice of words came off that way, it is hard for people to hear it. And so that's a choice you have to make. I think sometimes people use that as an excuse to just say what they want. And sometimes people just don't have the skills to rearrange their words in a way that lands more clearly. Yeah. I think one of the things, just to give Janae some flowers, I think one of the things I love about Janae when she's in these conversations is she can say the most powerful things, and the way she says them, the words she chooses, people have to hear them. And that's a really powerful tool. And I think in that toolbox of having difficult conversations, being able to shape your language so people are allowed to hear powerful things and they can take it in, that is a game changer for it sure. Is.
Yeah. Yeah. Janae gets heard a lot and for
sorry, now I embarrassed her.
It's so true though. It's so
Thank
true.
You.
Although I feel like that might become a burden at some point, Janae. I'm not sure. But
I hope not.
Yeah.
We'll see. I'll keep you posted.
Janae, but, what are your thoughts on this authenticity versus kind of...
It's such a great question because I often, like in my personal life, think about this, although I know the answer from my personal life. But in professional settings, I mean, I think to your point, to a point that was made earlier around like high quality connections, right? So if we have a culture where folks feel connected, where folks truly know one another, you know that if you're coming, you know yourself and you also know your coworker. And so you know that if you say things a certain way to one person, it'd be totally fine. But if you say it to someone else, they may be offended. And so I think just keeping that in mind, right? And to tap at this point, keeping these, you know, your intentions in mind is also, is just going to be, it's going to be phenomenal, right? If you just, if you focus on what your intention is and what the main goal is rather than like, well, I'm feeling fired up and let me be me kind of thing. Right. It's like, well, no, what is the goal of the conversation that we're having and how can I get my point across in that way? Because I've been in situations where I just want to be my authentic self and say things how I choose, but I'm like, that's not going to land with these folks. And so let me, you know, retweak. Let me tweak what I, you know, the way that I'm saying it. And so I think it's just really being mindful of your audience, right? And mindful of the folks that you're talking to. And I think, of course, there are heated moments where that goes out the window, unfortunately, right? But I think one of the things that needs to happen is you have to self-correct immediately and either apologize or, you know, whatever it takes to kind of mend that space and take accountability for, yes, I was being my authentic self, but I also hurt someone and that's not okay. So just kind of striking that balance.
I'm hearing something really important for both of you. And I mean, the reality is a lot of cultures don't have guardrails, right? And so you go into spots to have conversations and you realize, or we frequently realize, that there's no kind of cultural norms, right, around conversation, which puts everyone at risk, right? Everyone at risk, because it means any conversation has the potential to damage both individuals and the organization. And that before we can do anything, we need to figure out how it is we want to be together right now so that we can do that as we try to work forward.
I think the other thing that we haven't named yet is, and maybe that's another question we're going to talk about, but the, you know, in these organizations, these problematic communication dynamics that just exist that are about power and that are about pillars, that just exist already. And we can't just like operate inside those, right? Like we have to challenge and change those. Right. You know, my favorite thing that leaders have done, and this has happened to me more than once in my career, is when a leader steps into a space and goes, this is a safe space. Like it's a commandment, like it's an order. And
you will be safe.
I can't, the number of times that has happened, I'm like, you can't mandate that. That's not how that works. Like, so I think like that's an important thing to just name. You can't just put new things in the old space. You got to change the space.
Oh, that's good. So, if I'm a CEO of a company or a nonprofit that's trying to have impact in the world, and I have all this fear around having that conversation that I know I need to have, or a collective conversation around a really tough topic, I'm curious in a sense of thinking about going almost, Janae, you were kind of hitting on this too, around understanding the goals, or like, but this is like taking it even further. What is, if you will, the joy set before me that would allow me to really step into that fray, to step into that fear? What's made possible for me as a CEO, or me as a team leader, or me as an ED, if I courageously step into this? What's made possible in my culture, what's made possible in my fundraising, what's made possible in whatever it is that you've noticed and seen of like the after effects of being able to host these difficult conversations in this kind of way?
Well, the first thing that comes to mind, I'll pop in there, is definitely there's this, at least internally, right? There's this culture of trust now, right? And almost authenticity, because if I know that I can come to you and I can have these difficult conversations, I have a whole new respect for you as a leader, right? And I also know that when things get difficult, let's say, you know, in my specific department, that I can come to you and bring that in, maybe even be under your mentorship to then help whatever situation may be happening there. And so I think there's definitely this idea there's this feeling, right, that I can do that too, right? And that even though it's hard, I can step out and be brave and create those brave spaces as well.
For sure. I love that. Yeah. And I think, I mean, not everyone's so into personal growth, but you're going to grow a heck of a lot as a leader. Like, I mean, every painful conversation, every time I've been self-threatened or attacked or hurt someone that I care, like every terrible, you know, difficult conversation I've had, I have come out a stronger person. And as a leader, I think it's invaluable. I mean, nonprofit professionals too, we're a rare breed. Like we work hard, but we work harder when we are like feeling it, right? Yeah. So to create an environment where everyone feels seen and heard and connected to each other, that's, I mean, forget about just like, oh, that's nice. Like, that is a necessity where we have nonprofits failing left and right for money reasons. This is an invaluable resource to have a high functioning team who really feels like they can be in it together. And I think, you know, we all, I think most of us know, I won't say we all, but most of us know how important it is to have a diverse team and a diverse organization. We know what happens when you just have people that agree with you all the time. We know what happens when you don't engage the diversity of our world and the community. You're not going to be able, no matter how many DEIB policies you have, you are not going to be able to do that unless you are able to navigate difficult conversations in authentic ways. It's just not going to happen. People are going to come and leave. So there's so many like tangible reasons to do this besides just like, we should be doing this.
Yeah. Yeah. And I will just say, I think one of the other things that I have seen in my lived experience and also comes out in that, you know, research around high quality connections is that organizations have to be really careful of, the folks, in organizations that may be, driving down or creating spirals of negative communication. Right? Those individuals who kind of everyone in the organization kind of knows, right? They're that, you know, Sarah over there is a little bit of an issue, right? And we just kind of let it slide because letting kind of bad behavior slide is a real issue in organizations and signals to the rest of the staff, right? That it doesn't matter what I do here or how I show up and I can treat folks any way I want. And so I think as we think about difficult conversations, we don't mean conversations, right? Clearly through our conversation. And we have to be really careful about the dynamics we set up around kind of all communications in workplaces and really hold folks to account for showing up in the ways that we've all agreed to show up. Yeah.
And the beauty of the tools we've talked about is they apply to every difficult conversation. If we're talking about identity differences, if we're talking about work style differences, if we're talking about vision differences, same skills. So once you have them, you have them.
So folks, last question. We have just a few more minutes. I need some really practical steps. If I'm a nonprofit leader right now and I have an employee I need to talk to, I need to have a difficult conversation about race. I want to, you know, whatever it is, what are my top two or three practical steps I can take? And especially if you have them, any tools or resources folks can go check out.
Yeah, I would say you need to, the leadership needs to model it 1000%, whether it's comfortable or uncomfortable, you have to model it. I think you need the tools and the structures in every part of your organization. They're simple, apply them everywhere. And you need to seek out diverse opinions and thoughts and perspectives on your team to create that openness, that curiosity, and those questions.
Absolutely, I agree. And what I would add to that is, Don't be afraid to lean into that discomfort. I know it sounds like kind of a pie in the sky thing, but that's really what it boils down to, in my opinion, or one of the things that it boils down to. Because with that, to tap at this point, you're going to be modeling that behavior, right? If you can even, what we've been saying for most of this conversation, you can name the fact that, hey, this is what I'm attempting to do. I'm not going to be perfect at it, but I'm trying. You know, I think staff members will appreciate that. And something else that we mentioned earlier that I think is really important is ensuring that your staff members are heard and that their voices are included in this, right? So before we just jump into difficult conversations, asking what does the staff need from me? What do my stakeholders need from me? How can I make sure that this is a space that is truly a safe space? And I'm not just coming in demanding that it's a safe space, as Tabitha mentioned earlier. And so really I think if I had to like sum all of that up, it's really taking the I out of it and bringing the we into it, right? It's like, it's not about me. It's about the folks that I'm trying to, whose voices I'm trying to elevate and make sure that we are having this dialogue.
Yeah, I love that. Tucker, what about you? What are your fast tips?
I think based on some lived experience and what Janae and Tabitha have shared is if you notice reactivity happening in either yourself or in others, to just take a moment to pause. Like, we all have reactivity, and I, you know, even Sarah, what you're hitting on with bad behavior, I think any form of reactive behavior, whether it's fighting or flighting or freezing or fawning, generally speaking, isn't supportive of the environment. And so if we notice that within ourselves and within others, just encouraging a moment of pause, like, hey, can we just take 2 minutes? I'm feeling a little bit, my nervous system's going crazy, you know, like just so, and just create the space.
Yeah.
I think that's been so valuable for us, and I'm grateful for that. So that's a really practical tool to just give space to it.
Awesome. Well, I love that. I love having you all on this podcast. It was such a pleasure to see your two faces again on my screen. It's been too long. And we'll put kind of some links to some tools and resources in the show notes for y'all to check out.
Oh, yeah. Give us, if y'all have some tools, that would be great.
Yeah. Send them our way for sure. And then I'm sure Janae and Tabitha would be willing to connect with y'all on LinkedIn if you want to kind of send a request their way. So y'all, I hope you learned some things about difficult conversations. We're all still learning around difficult conversations, and hopefully we can all have them more often. So thanks to everyone for listening, and we'll see y'all soon.